I'm Dream Queen. You're in the cab with me. Thank you so much for being here. Thank you so much for rolling. Let's see. Happy Martin Luther King Jr. weekend. His birthday was on the 15th. I think that was Wednesday. Didn't see a lot going on Instagram for that. Huh. Let's not forget Dr. King, y'all. His message is more important now than ever. It's all relevant. Nuclear war, poverty, racial injustice, immigration, the quest to save our moral souls, our mortal moral souls. I think immortal souls, that's it. Don't forget Dr. King, y'all. I usually do a Dr. King show, but I didn't put together an exclusive Dr. King show. I like to play a little speech, you know, do these things. But go over to In the Cab Radio at Linktree. You can see some links for archives, and you can catch up on when we did A Knock at Midnight, which was just recently the last book for the book club. And there's all the sermons from A Knock at Midnight, inspirations from the great sermons of Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. That's edited by Claiborne Carson and Peter Holleran. I didn't put that together today because we're going to finish with the Khalil Gibran 3-pack on justice and freedom. I figured it was all relevant to each other. An orator said, "Speak to us of freedom." Orator, the speaker, asked al-Mustafa to speak of freedom. I have that here ready to go with some notes. And then I also do have my copy of A Knock at Midnight on hand. Maybe I'll do some blind flips and see where spirit wants us to go. A lot of underlines, a lot of asterisks I can just look at right now. Let's see. I got one for you. This is from the speech, A Knock at Midnight. Let's see what I got underlined here. In the terrible midnight of war, men have knocked on the door of the church to ask for the bread of peace, but the church has often disappointed them. What more pathetically reveals the irrelevancy of the church in present-day world affairs than its witness regarding war? In a world gone mad with arms buildups, chauvinistic passions, and imperialistic exploitation, the church has either endorsed these activities or remained appallingly silent. During the last two world wars, national churches even functioned as the ready lackeys of the state, sprinkling holy water upon the battleships and joining the mighty armies in singing, "Praise the Lord and pass the ammunition." A weary world, pleading desperately for peace, has often found the church morally sanctioning war. And those who have gone to the church to seek the bread of economic justice have been left in the frustrating midnight of economic privation. In many instances, the church has so aligned itself with the privileged classes and so defended the status quo that it has been unwilling to answer the knock at midnight. The Greek church in Russia allied itself with the status quo and became so inextricably bound to the despotic czarist regime that it became impossible to be rid of the corrupt political and social system without being rid of the church. Such is the fate of every ecclesiastical organization that allies itself with things as they are. The church must be reminded that it is not the master or the servant of the state, but rather the conscience of the state. It must be the guide and the critic of the state and never its tool. If the church does not recapture its prophetic zeal, it will become an irrelevant social club without moral or spiritual authority. If the church does not participate actively in the struggle for peace and for economic and racial justice, it will forfeit the loyalty of millions and cause men everywhere to say that it has atrophied its will. But if the church will free itself from the shackles of the deadening status quo, and recovering its great historic mission will speak and act fearlessly and insistently in terms of justice and peace. It will enkindle the imagination of mankind and fire the souls of men, imbuing them with a glowing and ardent love for truth, justice, and peace. Men far and near will know the church as a great fellowship of love that provides light and bread for lonely travelers at midnight. That's from the titular sermon from the book, A Knock at Midnight. That's published in Strength to Love, 1963, was the original publication of that sermon by Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. Don't forget the king, y'all. Okay, there's a reason that he was assassinated. It's just not a white supremacist on a stroll that took him out. For as much mystery as we give to the legacy of John F. Kennedy and Robert F. Kennedy, we have to say that this was a planned attack on Dr. King for his criticism of our nation and the way that things are done. There's a lot of people talking about meeting violence with violence, meeting resistance with head-on vengefulness. And we forget Dr. King and what he died for and why we even have a holiday for him. This ain't your regular money-making capitalist holiday. They're trying to make it that, but it's not that. Okay, and it's not a religious holiday. Finally, we get a holiday to honor an African-American person who was bombed, shot, stabbed, led many, 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 many thousands and millions of people to a better life, got civil rights on the books for all races. That's all due to his work and the work of the people that were all together at that time. It was a spiritual movement and it was a secular movement and it was an ecumenical movement across religions and spiritualities. People came together and they knew what they were coming together for. And it ain't over and it ain't never going to be over. So, respect and remember. Go over to In the Cab Radio at Linktree and you can see our series on Dr. King's work, especially the book club where we cover A Knock at Midnight by edited by Claiborne Carson and Peter Holleran. And this is a collection of sermons from Dr. King. And I said we were going to continue with the prophet, and that's what we're going to do. But I just want to say a little bit more about Dr. King. We've been covering these last three chapters of The Prophet by Khalil Gibran. Again, if you go to the Linktree in the Cab Radio, you will see book resources for The Prophet. I'm working on this one-man band I got here to get the rest, maybe some links for the other couple of books we've covered. There's links there for you to get copies of The Prophet in downloadable or view online free formats and learn more about Khalil Gibran. There's links to the show archives where you can hear myself and other people discussing A Knock at Midnight, discussing All About Love by Bell Hooks. But this three-part poem pack here, you know, it starts a couple of weeks ago with, then one of the judges of the city said, speak to us of crime and punishment, right? And then the lawyer asked about laws in the next week. And then this one, we've got freedom. And I wanted to try to mash up Dr. King and Khalil Gibran by talking about freedom a little bit and just Dr. King Day. And I've been just seeing so much misinformation out here. You know, people complaining about the work of Dr. King, people not being properly educated about the work of Dr. King. And I'm fearful that as our world surges toward an exacerbation of certain values or less values, that generations will get lost in the fog of ignorance. And we have to ask ourselves, who does that work for? You know, we don't have to ask ourselves, but we should, you know. Education is sorely lacking. You have the internet and people don't read books anymore. And I'm talking about books that, you know, are a little bit older than just right now, where people get all the information from the internet and put it in a book and then it's just marketing. I'm talking about real thoughts from people who have real ideas. And so I like the book club. I have a quote here from Father Theodore Hesburgh, the president of the University of Notre Dame at the time that this was written, which was in the, which when these were collected, these sermons from Dr. King, was in 1998. Okay, so this compilation was put together and they, A Knock at Midnight, and the editors asked contemporaries of Dr. King's to write introductions to each of the sermons. And this one from Father Theodore is from The Three Dimensions of a Complete Life. And I'm reading this part because it, you know, yeah, it really puts a little bit of perspective. And then I'm going to put Dr. King's words right after this. Father Theodore says, Martin was preaching in a time of enormous social concerns, social unrest, and deep-seated injustice that made it difficult for a black person to keep his or her self-respect. Martin simply says that life is about knowing and loving and respecting yourself, but not just that. That, he says, would be a selfish kind of life. One must not only be concerned about one's own inner peace, but also what one might do for the good of others. This guidance is tied to the problems of those days. Getting behind the social revolution, taking part in the civil rights movement, maintaining one's self-respect, and especially conquering fear of the present or even the future. Especially conquering fear of the present or even the future. I appreciate that, Father Theodore, because a lot of people, we're living in fear now. And even I found myself in those moments where I'm not feeling fear, then I run into someone and you know, then that is still projected at me, because then it's like, well, aren't you afraid? And, you know, yeah, we go through it. And sometimes I feel like I'm on here just getting people ready to die. It feels a little morbid sometimes talking about the soul, you know, but it's a part of life. And it also is, when we talk about freedom, you know, we have to look at all of the dimensions of what we are. And the sermon I just read that introduction for is called Three Dimensions of a Complete Life. Get to it. Check it out. But I'm going to read right now a little bit of Dr. King's own description of himself and his mission. And it's from a piece called Why Jesus Called a Man a Fool. And I'm going to just flip to the back here. I told y'all I wasn't going to do a whole Dr. King show, but I did bring the book. Man, it's a long sermon. This was delivered at Mount Pisgah Missionary Baptist Church in Chicago, the 27th of August, 1967. And I almost got into an internet fight about Dr. King the other day, but I left it. I left it alone. I wrote the thing. I posted it, the comments, and then I went back and I took it down. Because, you know, if people don't want to know, they don't want to know. And I can't be fighting people on the internet. It's just, think about that, y'all. It's just too draining. You know, I wind up just fighting myself and my own thoughts. And I don't need to be doing that with people on the internet. But I think folks just try to put Dr. King in a box, and they look at one thing. Oh, he's nonviolent, or some nonviolent leaders just are throwing people under the bus. You know, they just putting their people out there to be murdered. And, you know, the famous thing is to talk about what Kwame Ture or Stokely Carmichael had to say about Dr. King's philosophy being reliant on our enemies changing their minds and our enemy being the oppressor so evil that it's foolish to expect them to change. That's a way to think about it. Okay, but we also need to put the whole package about who he is and not disparage his character. Dr. King says on page 146, mid-paragraph. Well, I'm just going to go to the top of the paragraph. And I'm going to still need your prayer. I'm going to still need your support because the period that we face now is more difficult than any we've faced in the past. But this morning, I did not come to Mount Pisgah to give a civil rights address. I have to do a lot of that. I have to make numerous civil rights speeches. But before I was a civil rights leader, I was a preacher of the gospel. That was my first calling, and it still remains my greatest commitment. You know, actually, all that I do in civil rights, I do because I consider it a part of my ministry. I have no other ambitions in life but to achieve excellence in the Christian ministry. I don't plan to run for any political office. I don't plan to do anything but remain a preacher. And what I'm doing in this struggle, along with many others, grows out of my feeling that the preacher must be concerned about the whole man, not merely his soul, but his body. It's all right to talk about heaven. I talk about it because I believe firmly in immortality. But you've got to talk about the earth. It's all right to talk about long white robes over yonder, but I want a suit and some shoes to wear down here. It's all right to talk about the streets flowing with milk and honey in heaven, but I want some food to eat down here. It's even all right to talk about the New Jerusalem, but one day we must begin to talk about the New Chicago, the New Atlanta, the new New York, the new America. And any religion that professes to be concerned about the souls of men and is not concerned about the slums that cripple the souls, the economic conditions that stagnate the soul, and the city governments that may damn the soul, is a dry, dead, do-nothing religion in need of new blood. Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., talking about where he's coming from. And he's also spent a lot of time calling out the Christian church. So people who categorize to your face that Dr. King was a laid down kind of not really thinking, just going along with the status quo, safe preacher. You got to understand that he called out everybody. And again, like I said, there's at least three places where I could see where his assassination would have been wanted. And as we face Christian nationalism right now, as I always say, we have to know about the different phases of Christianity. Not everybody, not all Christians, hashtag, okay? But history is often written by the winners. And the struggle right now is to keep our side of things told. Don't lose your books, people. All right. So I'm going to put down Dr. King for a minute. I got a lot of bookmarks in here, but we're going to stay with the prophet. And we're talking about the soul and we're talking about freedom. And let's see what Khalil Gibran says about freedom. For those of you not familiar with the prophet, I'm going to get a very brief rundown of what we've covered. Al-Mustafa is a hermit and a sage who's been living in Orphalese for 12 years. We don't really know why he's there, how he wound up there, but or how old he is or anything. But he's been there and he's looking out and he's seeing his ship coming to take him back to his homeland, and he's ready to go. And on his way down to meet the ship, the people of the village see him, and they walk with him and put down their work. And a priestess comes out of the temple and goes into the square with all of them and says, "Hey, we can't keep you here. You're a traveler, but you're also a sage. Would you please tell us what you've observed about all between life and death? Tell us about ourselves." Al-Mustafa says, "There's nothing that I can tell you that you don't already know within your heart. However, throw me some questions. We'll see here while we wait for the boat." And so that's what we're doing. And we're on, I believe it's the 12th or 13th or 14th piece. I'm losing count. There's a lot in this teeny tiny little book. It's a lot in this teeny tiny little book. It's like a burrito, you know. It's this big, big meal in a little package. An orator said, "Speak to us of freedom." And he answered, "At the city gate and by your fireside, I have seen you prostrate yourself and worship your own freedom. Even as slaves humble themselves before a tyrant, you praise him, though he slays them, and praise him, though he slays them. I, in the grove of the temple and in the shadow of the citadel, I have seen the freest among you wear their freedom as a yoke and a handcuff. And my heart bled within me, for you can only be free when even the desire of seeking freedom becomes a harness to you. And when you cease to speak of freedom as a goal and a fulfillment, you shall be free indeed when your days are not without a care, nor your nights without a want and a grief, but rather when these things girdle your life and yet you rise above them, naked and unbound. And how shall you rise beyond your days and nights unless you break the chains which you, at the dawn of your understanding, have fastened around your noon hour? In truth, that which you call freedom is the strongest of these chains, though its links glitter in the sun and dazzle your eyes. And what is it but fragments of your own self you would discard that you may become free? If it is an unjust law you would abolish, that law was written with your own hand upon your own forehead. You cannot erase it by burning your law books, nor by washing the foreheads of your judges, though you pour the sea upon them. And if it is a despot you would dethrone, see first that his throne erected within you is destroyed. For how can a tyrant rule the free and the proud, but for a tyranny in their own freedom and a shame in their own pride? And if it is a care you would cast off, that cart has been chosen by you rather than imposed upon you. And if it is a fear you would dispel, the seed of that fear is in your heart and not in the hand of the feared. Verily, all things move within your being in constant half embrace, the desired and the dreaded, the repugnant and the cherished, the pursued and that which you would escape. These things move within you as lights and shadows in pairs that cling. And when the shadow fades and is no more, the light that lingers becomes a shadow to another light. And thus your freedom, when it loses its fetters, becomes itself the fetter of a greater freedom. Khalil Gibran on freedom from the Prophet. Well, that first hour flew by. And now everything seems to have slowed down as I struggle to understand these words. We're here together in class trying to understand what's going on, Marvin Gaye. So I have some notes. Let's read them together. What is my scribbles? Because this came together on like Tuesday, y'all. This is ancient history. One of my notes is, I ask us to ask, what is freedom? What is freedom truly? Nina Simone has a famous quote, or is famously quoted as saying, freedom for her is no fear. No fear. And Nina Simone was not a nonviolent person. That's the thing, is that we struggle to exist with all of the polarities within us, right? So we have to define for ourselves what is freedom. I have a quote here from Dr. King. This came across during the last hour. I was shoving my bookmarks in, and now I'm moved to share it. It's about the bootstrap philosophy myth. Dr. King says during the sermon, "Remaining awake through a great revolution." Now, there's another myth that still gets around. It is a kind of over-reliance on the bootstrap philosophy. There are those who still feel that if the Negro is to rise out of poverty, if the Negro is to rise out of the slum conditions, if he is to rise out of discrimination and segregation, he must do it all by himself. And so they say the Negro must lift himself up by his own bootstraps. They never stop to realize that no other ethnic group has been a slave on American soil. The people who say this never stop to realize that the nation made the black man's color a stigma. But beyond this, they never stop to realize the debt that they owe a people who were kept in slavery 244 years. In 1863, the Negro was told that he was free as a result of the Emancipation Proclamation being signed by Abraham Lincoln. But he was not given any land to make that freedom meaningful. It was something like keeping a person in prison for a number of years and suddenly discovering that that person is not guilty of the crime for which he was convicted. And you must go up to him and say, "Now you're free." But you don't give him any bus fare to get to town. You don't give him any money to get some clothes to put on his back, or even to get on his feet again in life. Every court of jurisprudence would rise up against this, and yet this is the very thing our nation did to the black man. It simply said, "You're free," and it left him there penniless, illiterate, not knowing what to do. And the irony of it all is that at the same time, the nation failed to do anything for the black man, though. Congress was giving away millions of acres of land in the West and the Midwest, which meant that it was willing to undergird its white peasants from Europe with an economic floor. But not only did it give the land, it built land-grant colleges to teach them how to farm. Not only that, it provided county agents to further their expertise in farming. Not only that, As the years unfolded, it provided low interest rates so that they could mechanize their farms. And to this day, thousands of those very persons are receiving millions of dollars in federal subsidies every year not to farm. And these are so often the very people who tell Negroes that they must lift themselves by their own bootstraps. It's all right to tell a man to lift himself by his own bootstraps, but it is a cruel jest to say to a bootless man that he ought to lift himself up by his own bootstraps. That's Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. remaining awake through a good, through a great revolution. Good revolution, huh? We never talk about that. I want a good revolution. I don't want just any old revolution. I want one that is an evolution. So when we talk about freedom, we're all talking about different things, that's occurred to me. Things are crumbling for more and more people now. And it's very difficult for some of us to remain compassionate with the great big "I told you so" on our lips. Things aren't fair for American farmers now. They're struggling real bad. When these things that Dr. King is saying, that land that they were giving away, that's due to the forced removals of the indigenous people who were here. And the forced removals and genocides. You know, that land was occupied. And those people were told they're free to move on to the reservation where they're out of their element, thousands of miles away from where they started out, maybe have settled. Some people were migratory and are now confined to vast deserts, waterless plains with no food, except what the government's giving them, some buggy flour and sugar. But that's freedom. And then when we moved along and began to build our towns, then the Klan and the police and the government, they come and they bomb and they set things on fire and they don't get persecuted or prosecuted. But you're free. And then we're going to make a bunch of movies and disparage your character. We're going to get into people's minds and tell them who you are. And we're going to make you forget in schools, residential schools and public schools, who you are, so you won't even know. But you're free. Free to create a sense of self in a vast ocean of ignorance and mockery and gaslighting. So freedom. We're out of the shackles of slavery, but then we have the 13th Amendment. Now I think I'm beginning to understand what Gibran was saying. There are these levels to it. So in his last line, your freedom, when it loses its fetters, becomes itself the fetter of a greater freedom. And we just have to keep... I'm going to read this backwards now. The light and the dark, you know, the yin and the yang, the Tao, when this constant flow of trying to balance the duality. At least I get paid to work now. However, look at inflation. I'm free, right? But now there's the next level that I got to get more free. We got to keep getting more free. I got a note here that says, what's next in the evolution of the soul? I don't know. What was I on, y'all? I was probably smoking. What's next in the evolution of the soul? What we cling to in our... When we're going back here, that line... and how shall you rise beyond your days and nights unless you break the chains which you, at the dawn of your understanding, have fastened around your noon hour? Right. So we talk about language and how Gibran is using analogies and allegories and things. And so when we say, the dawn of your understanding, I feel like that means when we first begin to grasp concepts. Like if we think about things, like we think about literally how a day happens. You have the dawn, you have the noon, and then you have the evening. And that's a metaphor for life. And it can also be used as a metaphor for the mind. We open up the prophet. Gibran says Al-Mustafa was a dawn unto his own day. And I did a little research about where some people might think that comes from. And he was the sun shining brand new, beginning a dawning of understanding in his own day, meaning of his generation, while he's here. Like, Martin Luther King was a dawn into his own day. I don't know. Do we already... I'm not going to go down that road, sorry. But, so when, as we grow and we understand, we can't use the knowledge that we had in the dawn of our understanding to make the same choices that we would do at noontime, because now we have more information in between. So it's about spiritual evolution and intelligence. It's up to us to see where we want to go. Each individual, you can decide where you want to go. Of course you can. What we cling to in early understanding must be continually outgrown, overstood, and shed as we move to greater expression. Yeah, very much so. There's a quote here from Loving Your Enemies. Dr. King says, somebody must have religion enough and morality enough to cut it off and inject within the very structure of the universe that strong and powerful element of love. The strong person is the person who can cut off the chain of hate, the chain of evil. Loving your enemies. It's not a popular subject these days. Not at all. I don't even hear people talking about it anymore. Really. When Khalil Gibran speaks about us taking responsibility and accountability for justice and injustice as individuals in our own lives and not just leaving it up to the judges. Many of us want to say, I didn't vote for that. I don't have anything to do with that over there. This is all against my will. And then we turn and we tell each other how we're going to show up in a movement. And oftentimes it is using the same tools that the oppressor uses. We're going to get to Audre Lorde on this show one day, God willing. The master's tools will not dismantle the master's house. You are rebuilding the master's house. We're using tools that were planted inside of us. I can't say that I don't blame anybody for wanting to go that way, but we have to ask each other at the end of the day. It's helpful in evolution to say, as Gibran says, if it's an unjust law you would abolish, That law was written with your own hand upon your own forehead. You can't erase it by burning your law books or by washing the foreheads of your judges, though you pour the whole sea on them. And if it's a despot you would dethrone, see first that his throne erected within you is destroyed. I'm not following nobody's movement. If you tell me that you got the best in mind for me, but you still don't have equity in mind for me, or you still want to yell at me and push me and make me do what things the way you're doing it because you feel like it's right because it's going to free me, then I'm going to have to fight you when I'm done fighting Elon Musk. So we had to think about how we're approaching people. And I have a note here that says, the dangers of isms, groups, cults, alt political parties, zealotry of all kinds, left and right. And so these strange ideas like nonviolent resistance and loving your enemy is, I mean, you know, I'm not looking for validation. I'm not even fully committed to one way or the other. I'm still here learning too, right? I just happen to be on the microphone. You can come get a show, KMRD. I'll text Stella, KMRD.fm. Go over to the website if you want to get on the microphone and say some stuff to people. But I'm just saying, though, I'm just a person here trying to figure it out, right? But I like it. I like it. I went through a lot, and I still have a lot of rage. Don't get it twisted. But I know that's not going to solve anything. It's just going to make people I want to ally with be afraid of me now. And I don't want that. So think about that in your movement. If you want a fear-based movement, then go for it. That's a great way to get it done. You get it done fast. And we often ask the question of, are you feared or are you respected? Like, what kind of leader do you want to be? Dr. King says, again, from Loving Your Enemies on page 46 of A Knock at Midnight. So somehow the isness of our present nature is out of harmony with the eternal oughtness that forever confronts us. And this simply means this, that within the best of us, there is some evil. Within the worst of us, there is some good. When we come to see this, we take a different attitude toward individuals. The person who hates you most has some good in him. Even the nation that hates you most has some good in it. Even the race that hates you most has some good in it. And when you come to the point that you look in the face of every man and see deep down within him what religion calls the image of God, you begin to love him in spite of, no matter what he does, you see God's image there. There is an element of goodness that he can never slough off. Discover the element of good in your enemy as you seek to hate him. Find the center of goodness and place your attention there, and you will take a new attitude. Another way to love your enemy is this. When the opportunity presents itself for you to defeat your enemy, that is a time which you must not do it. There will come a time in many instances when the person who hates you most, the person who has misused you most, the person who has gossiped about you most, the person who has spread false rumors about you most, there will come a time when you will have an opportunity to defeat that person. It might be in terms of a recommendation for a job. It might be in terms of helping that person to make some move in life. This is a time when you must not do it. That is the meaning of love. In the final analysis, love is not this sentimental something that we talk about. It is not merely an emotional something. Love is creative, understanding, goodwill for all men. It is the refusal to defeat any individual. When you rise to the level of love, of its great beauty and power, you seek only to defeat evil systems. Individuals who happen to be caught up in that system, you love, but you seek to defeat the system. Right. Defeat the system. I keep thinking about the system and the people in it. There's so many levels to so many to all of this. Nobody lives forever. It's not everybody's hand that is the one to be raised to commit certain acts. I'll leave it to the flaming Teslas. Dr. King says, there's another reason why you should love your enemies, and that is because hate distorts the personality of the hater. That's the point here. That's the point I was trying to make. Hate distorts the personality of the hater. So in this, a little further on, I got 3 points here for us. And then I'm going to close and get ready for the next hour. Number one, from Dr. King. History unfortunately leaves some people oppressed and some people oppressors. And there are 3 ways that individuals who are oppressed can deal with their oppression. One of them is to rise up against their oppressors with physical violence and corroding hatred. But that is not the way. For the danger and the weakness of this method is its futility. Violence creates many more social problems than it solves. And as I've said in so many instances, that as the Negro in particular and colored people all over the world struggle for freedom, if they succumb to the temptation of using violence in their struggle, unborn generations will be the recipients of a long and desolate night of bitterness, and our chief legacy to the future will be an endless reign of meaningless chaos. Violence is not the way. Another way is to acquiesce and give in, to resign yourself to the oppression. Some people do that. They discover the difficulties of the wilderness moving into the promised land, and they would rather go back to the despots of Egypt because it's difficult to get in the promised land. And so they resign themselves to the fate of oppression. They somehow acquiesce to this thing. But that too isn't the way, because non-cooperation with evil is as much a moral obligation as its cooperation with good. I'm going to say that again for the people in the back. Non-cooperation with evil is as much a moral obligation as is cooperation with good. But there is another way, and that is to organize mass nonviolent resistance based on the principle of love. It seems to me that this is the only way as our eyes look to the future. As we look out across the years and across the generations, let us develop and move right here. We must discover the power of love, the redemptive power of love. And when we discover that, we will be able to make of this old world a new world. We will be able to make men better. Love is the only way. Okay? So, look into love. I can't find it right now. There is this one little piece he had where he is talking about how you can get revenge on loving your enemies, because it'll kind of freak them out at first. Like when you show somebody who's got so much hate for you, if you just stay unbothered. Here it is. This is my closing thought. Here's the person who is a neighbor, and this person is doing something wrong to you and all that. Just keep being friendly to that person. Just keep loving them. Don't do anything to embarrass them. Just keep on loving them. And they can't stand it too long. They react in many ways in the beginning. They react with bitterness because they're mad because you love them like that. They react with guilt feelings. And sometimes they'll hate you a little more in that transition period. But just keep loving them. And by the power of your love, they will break down under the load. That's love, you see. It is redemptive. And this is why Jesus says love. There's something about love that builds up and is creative. There is something about hate that tears down and is destructive. So love your enemies. I don't know. It's futuristic. Futuristic thoughts. Reverend Martin Luther King Jr.
In the Cab Radio is produced by Jada White. Original theme music produced by Baby Weekend Boys and Icky Mac the Beat Jugular. Learn more at In the Cab Radio at Linktree. Thank you so much for tuning in.